is BBC Television from London. A short while ago, Buckingham Palace confirmed the death of Diana, Princess of Wales. The princess died following a car accident in Paris. She was 36. A statement issued by the palace says the Queen and the Prince of Wales are deeply shocked and distressed by the terrible news.
Welcome to A Fork in Time, the alternate history podcast.
Welcome to A Fork in Time, your alternative history podcast, and in a little bit of a role reversal today, this is Alexis Shelley. I'm going to be your host along our little jaunt through history. As you just heard, what you did just hear was the broadcast of anybody who was watching the BBC on the morning of September 1st in 1997. That's what they would have heard. Hearing the news that unfortunately Diana, the Princess of Wales, had passed away in that fateful car accident in Paris. Of course, as always, I am joined by your normal host. Today he is my co-host. Of course, he also happens to be my dad, Don Shelley. How are you doing today, Dad?
I'm okay. How are you today, Alexis?
I'm good. Well, as we have established on the podcast, I am a pretty self-professed Britophile, so we're jaunting back down that path today, but actually to some fairly recent history, actually recent history that happened in my lifetime, although I don't quite remember it. I can't point to where I was when this news was broadcast on our side of the pond, but I'm sure people that are listening can say that they remember where they were and what they were doing when they heard the fateful news. Are you part of that camp?
I am part of that camp. I actually remember it happened to be when we were actually moving between houses, and we had just completed a day of moving and had just laid down at where we were staying temporarily while things were between the two households, and saw the reports on the news. I guess it would be CNN that night for us versus the following day there in Europe. The other thing we should establish right up front, I am not the Britophile, nor am I the fashion icon. So if at any point we understand or have to get into Diana's impact on fashion or other things that are like that, also a good reason why I would not be leading off as the primary host on this account. But yes, I do remember where I was. I guess you were, thinking back now, you would have been 6 years old at the time.
Yeah, little young to remember quite the specifics of the day.
Yeah, but certainly remember the impact of it. And even though here in the United States, it wasn't obviously American monarchy that was lost, or someone who had been monarchy. I guess that's part of the issue we may even talk about today. But certainly a figure that was well known in popular culture.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, of course, we are going to be talking about Diana, Princess of Wales. And, of course, the point of A Fork in Time is to take one specific incident that happens and to explore the alternate possibility if that would have turned out a little bit differently. I think the fork that we're going to go with is that accident does ultimately happen on August 31st, 1997. In that tunnel in Wales, but I think the bend we're going to take on it is that Diana actually survives that car accident. The injuries she has are ultimately non-life threatening, and that she walks away from that accident in Paris and is able to continue her life. And what those implications would have been for not only her but her sons, her ex-husband, who we will talk about here shortly, and the her former in-laws.
Well, I guess one of the things that jumped out at me in the research that I did was the realization that, you think of the horrific accident, which apparently killed the driver there going through that tunnel underneath the Seine in Paris almost instantly. But she didn't have outward appearances of injuries. Apparently was not wearing a seatbelt. So there is a lot of speculation that had she simply been wearing a seatbelt, the scenario that you're talking about, the fork in time, where she's in an accident, she's injured in an accident, but not fatally so, is not that far-fetched, given that it appears the only thing that may have not caused that to be the outcome was the very fact that she was not wearing a seatbelt.
Correct. You were absolutely correct. She was not wearing a seatbelt in the car. And also a misconception, certainly one that I had for a while, was that she died at the scene. She does not. She is taken alive from the scene in an ambulance to a hospital and dies later. Actually, the given cause of death is cardiac arrest. So that's another important thing to remember, is that she did not die instantly like that driver did. She was alive for at least a few hours following the accident and ultimately died in the hospital.
So what was the actual course of history? Again, we always like to discuss the real history before we explore the alternatives. So what were some of the implications of her death, the real timeline?
Sure. To go through the real timeline, just to hit kind of some high points, if you will, Diana was born in 1961. Her ex-husband, the one she actually marries, is Charles, the Prince of Wales. He was actually born in 1948. Then they actually married in 1981. So Diana, I'm not great at math, but I can do that math. Diana would have been 20. Charles would have been 32. 33. So quite a little bit of an age difference between the two. Then quickly following their marriage, their first child, William, was born in 1982, followed by another child, Harry, or Henry, as he was formerly known, in 1984. Going a little bit further, Charles and Diana actually separate in 1992. There had been a disintegration of their marriage. But they actually don't divorce until 1996, the year before that fateful day in Paris. So that's kind of a quick snapshot of everything ultimately leading up to where we find ourselves in Paris. Charles and Diana, of course, marry. They have two children. Things turn a little bit south. They divorce, and that's what ultimately leads her to be in Paris with none other than Dodi Al-Fayed, the son of Mohammed Al-Fayed, who famously owns Harrods Department Store in London.
I know for me, not being as much of the Britophile that you are, but familiar with the story, obviously, because just being hard not to be familiar with what went on because it was in the media.
Right.
But also, I guess, probably the events surrounding this, at least from the viewpoint of the British monarchy, probably best known in movie form, by the movie The Queen, which literally is around the events of Diana's death and the response of the monarchy to that death.
Yeah, that whole movie essentially takes place within about a week and a half span following the death and everything that happens after that. So that's kind of what most people think of when they think of this particular event in history is that movie and that portrayal of these events.
So what else about the original timeline is sort of significant that may be important to know when you think about the alternative timeline?
A couple other things are significant to know. Her two sons, of course, William and Harry. William is 15 when his mother passes away. Harry is 13, being born 2 years after William. And also, there had been another person who was pretty significant in Charles's life, his longtime love, Camilla Parker Bowles.
And what is Camilla's current status?
Currently, she is now known as the Duchess of Cornwall. She is Charles's second wife. It's important to note that Charles and Camilla met many, many years before Diana ever came into the picture. They kind of ran in the same circles in terms of society and things like that. So they instantly formed a connection. But Camilla was kind of seen as the commoner, so to speak, the person not so suitable for the heir to the throne. So they were friends, warm friends. They had a romantic relationship, but Charles had to go and select a person who was more suitable. Diana was part of the aristocracy. She was a lady. So Diana ultimately became his wife of choice, but Charles never lost that connection with Camilla. There's that famous interview that Diana did in 1996 where she ultimately said that there were three people in her marriage, and I think everybody pretty much knew who that third person who Diana was referring to was. It was Camilla. So, of course, following Diana's death in 1997, Charles again keeps up that relationship with Camilla, ultimately marrying her in April of 2005. So as we go forward, we'll definitely probably one of the points we'll be talking about is, would that marriage have taken place if Diana had not ultimately died in that car crash in Paris?
Even though at the time of the crash, she and Charles were divorced.
She and Charles were divorced, yes, absolutely. So Charles was within his right to remarry, but a couple issues with that. One, he will, upon assuming the throne, will become head of the Church of England, which up until fairly recently, actually around this point, did not even recognize divorce. But also, it would have been not the greatest image to have a heir to the throne remarrying when his first wife is still alive. It's a little more, I hate to say acceptable, but a little more acceptable when you have an ex-wife who has unfortunately passed away than an ex-wife who's still around it in the picture.
And again, just for the benefit of those of us who don't follow titles and aristocracy quite the same way as others, what actually is Diana's title at the time of her death? So the title that she would have retained moving forward in time.
She actually does retain the title Princess of Wales. It is important to note she had lost her HRH, or Her Royal Highness status, meaning that she was not considered a member of the monarchy at the time of her death. She was not considered part of the family at all. It was part of her divorce settlement in 1996 that she was allowed to maintain Princess of Wales as a status, but not HRH or Her Royal Highness. So if you've ever seen the movie The Queen, one of the points that gets made when they're talking about her funeral is she shouldn't be afforded a state funeral. She's not a member of the royal family. And the point that gets counter to that is, well, she's the mother of an heir. She still has a kind of, she still belongs in that world, so to speak.
Okay, well, good. So, having discussed what happened in real history timeline, I guess what are some of the immediate things that pop out as being things that would have happened if there had been that fork in time? And again, your fork is that Diana is in the crash but survives the crash.
Correct.
So, what's sort of the first thing of significance that might be noted from that?
The first thing that might be significant and note in that is that after the divorce, there was kind of a tension in the relationship with the family. Diana was still connected because of, obviously, her two children and the fact that they are part of the royal family, but she is now not. So there is that tension between her former in-laws. And so I think if she had lived, there might have been eventually kind of a thawing in that relationship as they kind of negotiated a peace and kind of a way to move forward, particularly with Prince Philip, her former father-in-law, who's kind of been known to be maybe somewhat of a curmudgeon, a little bit set in his ways. It is important to note that in the real timeline, that what does happen is when she has her funeral, William, her oldest son, is of course still reeling from the death of his mother, and he actually makes a decision he is not going to walk behind her coffin as it makes its progression through London. And Philip actually says, I'll walk with you if you decide you can do this. And so it's, Philip is kind of seen as this, you know, I didn't like her, wasn't a fan, but it's important to know he does actually walk behind that coffin, show that respect and show that support of his grandsons and them losing their mother. So I think that if she had lived, there might have been that thawing in that relationship, that peace that had become kind of more apparent as they kind of worked through and negotiated what their life would have been like as she became an ex-member of the royal family, but still connected through her sons.
What I remember and what I recall, and I guess what I also just seem to just know intuitively, is that part of the tension that existed, it's sort of exhibited in the movie The Queen and other places, was this sort of the royals thought about what it meant to have publicity and being in the media versus what Diana had brought to the role, which was both, I guess, embraced by the monarchy to some degree, particularly in the early days. I can remember the wedding of Charles and Diana, and certainly there was plenty of publicity around that. The royal family was happy to have that publicity. But there was this tension that obviously existed between sort of what was the appropriate public role and the types of things that you did in the public spotlight. And certainly Diana, to a great degree, challenged those conventions and pushed the envelope on that, to say the least. So part of the tension that existed was in that. Is it, in your opinion, is it likely that tension would have continued, or how might that have changed with a surviving Diana versus a now deceased Diana.
Definitely. She not only pushed that mold, she definitely broke that mold. There was kind of this, you know, the monarchy was supposed to get out and be seen by the public, but there was definitely this divide of what was acceptable and what was not. And Diana broke that. She was most notably the first person to ever shake hands with somebody who had been diagnosed with AIDS without using gloves or any kind of protective gear, which was seen as a landmark accomplishment, landmark event. So definitely I think that there would have been kind of this greater divide of, I'm going to use my power for good and doing all these things, and I'm going to let the royal family do what they've always done and kind of become this the more sheltered and more acceptable view of the world, whereas Diana was using definitely her spotlight to shine a light on these things that weren't necessarily glamorous, weren't necessarily the things that everybody wanted to talk about and wanted to focus on. Things like AIDS, leprosy, landmines, homelessness, drug addiction. Those are not the things that were typically thought of as causes for the royal family to champion behind.
Certainly social causes that others have championed behind in you know, the last 15, 20, 30 years. But again, as you point out, not necessarily royal family causes. And so Diana had pushed the limit on that. Are you suggesting that if she lives, her being more involved in that would have pushed the royal family to want to be part of that, or that she would have just continued to do that separate from them?
I think she at first would have continued to do that separately from them. Maybe it would have happened eventually that the royal family kind of got, in a sense, dragged along. Like, okay, let's jump on this, for lack of a better term, bandwagon. But I think Diana would have championed that and gone way ahead of it instead of this kind of almost coming together. You know, her sons, William and Harry, kind of take up that mantle pretty instantly after her death as a 15 and 13 year old. Whereas it kind of would have been them trying to play catch up to Diana, who had run ahead of time and had spent multiple years kind of championing these causes, and then the royal family kind of being like, okay, let's get on board with this.
Or they would have just gone along with, sort of followed in her footsteps, been partnered with her, and then eventually in a position where they would have been, it would have been more their causes or equally their causes as opposed to hers.
Right, right. It's interesting now, you know, we have, of course, she famously took them to a homeless shelter in London. William is now patron of that charity. His wife is famously involved with a charity on addiction. So, again, more of a sharing of the cause instead of a running to catch up with her.
Okay. So you mentioned one of the possible changes would have been what ultimately became the marriage of Charles to, I guess, his real love.
Yes.
Of his life, that what he was precluded from marrying initially and then eventually does so. Is if Diana were alive today, would there be a marriage between Charles and Camilla?
I don't think so. I think that there wouldn't be, simply because there'd be that tension. Definitely, I know personally, I haven't thought of Camilla. I've softened my stance on Camilla, let's say, in the last few years or so. Definitely, I remember in April 2005, which is when they ultimately got married. I kind of let, like, okay, great, like, he's finally marrying her, but I wasn't a huge fan, just because she is kind of seen as the other woman. And so I think if Diana had lived, Charles and Diana would have had to find this piece to figure out how to raise their boys, how to coexist in a way. I think Charles would have not ultimately married Camilla, just because it would have caused friction and would have caused a strange relationship. So ultimately he would have denied himself that ultimate goal of marrying Camilla. I think something that is interesting to note is Camilla's actually done a great job in kind of endearing herself to the public. She's become a great addition to the family. Everyone knows that she is Charles's love and has kind of warmed up to her. One of the things that I would say warms me up to her is the fact that she technically is Princess of Wales. She is married to the Prince of Wales. That is her title by right. She chooses not to go by it. She goes by the Duchess of Cornwall. And one of the reasons she does that is to respect Diana. Diana is known as Princess of Wales. Camilla knows that is not my title. Even though it technically is, she chooses to go by Duchess of Cornwall as a mark of respect, which I think is makes Camilla a very, very respectful person.
So again, in the alternate timeline here, a survived Diana is still alive. There's no marriage between Charles and Camilla. So let's say that all of a sudden tomorrow, there's announced the death of the very long reigning and seemingly almost impervious to death Elizabeth II. Would a divorced but not remarried Charles take the throne?
He would. I think he would. Of course, he would be. He'd be a very different king than what would have happened if he had been allowed to marry Camilla, or if he had been still married to Diana. I think he would have been a little more lost, a little more aloof, a little more out of touch than ultimately he has become because of his late wife Diana, his sons, and the subsequent years that have kind of, again, brought him around to a more... more real view of the world, so to speak, kind of more in touch with the common folk.
So that would be one of the things that would not likely change in either of the timelines, just the fact that there would be a unmarried King Charles.
Correct.
Versus a married King Charles.
Correct.
And so that sometimes things change and sometimes things don't. One of the things that we were talking about before we began recording was the idea of the impact of Diana moving forward in time with the advent of social media. Given given how much she was in the public eye, was followed by the press, where the press was sort of a filter through which she had to be seen. I mean, one of the unique aspects, as we know from the current way that things work, is social media allows more of a direct contact between a celebrity and their public. So what would a surviving Diana have been like, I don't know, with a Twitter account or maybe Instagram?
Diana would definitely have a Twitter. I'm positive of that. And she would definitely be using social media to her benefit. Diana was known to visit her charities, and she would sneak in, and I'm using air quotes for all the people who are listening, to hospitals, but... Quite frequently, the press had been tipped off so that they could come and they could get their photo, and she could ultimately get the spotlight shown on what she was trying to champion. So I think if she was allowed to have a Twitter, a social, a Facebook, an Instagram, any kind of those outlets, I think definitely she'd be using that as a platform to further her philanthropic efforts and further her goals to great success.
What often happens, I was thinking about this with her death, is, you know, people become, even though she's not a martyr by any stroke of the imagination by how she dies, there is something that happens with someone's, when there's an untimely death, in terms of how their legacy is viewed. Is it possible that a surviving Diana, who I guess would be, wow, when you think about it now, this has been more than 20 years. Would 20 years of Diana moving forward perhaps have given her personality, given even the things we're talking about, social media, perhaps is there maybe less of a luster around Diana with maybe just the very fact of social media or the way that the press even works now compared to them digging deeper into who she was and what she was? Again, the change in technology and the change that press works, is it possible that she might not... she might have tons of Instagram followers, but there may be a lot of folks who are more anti-Diana in a scenario where she lives than there are today.
Definitely, definitely. While I love Princess Diana, she was not perfect. She had several kind of skeletons in the closet, so to speak. She did suffer from bulimia. She had some self-confidence issues. She had things like that that I think would have been exacerbated by the age of social media, by the age of intense public scrutiny, paparazzi. And I think a lot of people would have been able to find things that they didn't necessarily find appealing or didn't necessarily agree with in the way she lived her life and the way she dealt with some of her relationships and things like that. So I think there wouldn't have been that sainthood, so to speak. I think there would have been more of a humanity in her than what tends to happen when you have people dying at such a young age where they kind of become deified. So I definitely think it would have would have brought her down, made her a little bit more, not as much of a martyr, not as much of a saint, a little bit more personable and a little bit more of a person.
Yeah, and I can't help but think there that I was interested to learn that I've never read them, but there have been a lot of books that have been written that, that are along this subject, fiction, including one that I found very interesting where Diana fakes her death. So I sort of now have Diana and Elvis, I guess, potentially in the same camp of those that, you know, we want to believe are still alive. And in the case of Elvis, he's supposed to be hiding on an island somewhere in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I don't know where Diana would be hiding. But under the scenario that, that goes on there, the thing that popped into my head was, I guess many of her faults, if you will, the things you were describing, sort of didn't become public knowledge until after her death. So they're viewed through the lens of that. So if these things become public, in my mind, you know, putting my opinion here, not knowing as much about the detail, having thought about it as much, I think it's interesting to see that some of those things may not have been viewed as favorably through without the lens of her dying an untimely death. And some of them she may have received a tremendous amount of additional recognition for having the courage to share them. Bulimia is the one that jumps to my mind when you think about so many that have talked about that and other eating disorders. If she had chosen to reveal that disorder, to become a champion or an advocate for that disorder, I think it would have been shocking to some. With the same token, I think it's very likely that she would have received high marks for being willing to bear that part of the condition that she obviously suffered with, and may have actually, had the opposite effect there of getting more prestige and certainly more recognition for having the courage to do that. So I think it's interesting to me that in some of those ways, as you were just talking about, the faults, if you will, that she had, could have played both ways. Some of them,
right.
If she had lived in a different type of society where celebrities, and let's face it, she was a celebrity as much as she was a...
As much as I hate that word when it comes to members of the royal family, yes.
She was sort of the ultimate celebrity royal, at least of this generation. Then in that sense, her celebrity cuts both ways.
Correct. Yeah, you can definitely see kind of both sides to that. You know, she had this pressure to be perfect, and so those things were kind of hidden. So if she had been able to shine a light on those issues, she would have been, you know, glorified for that. You know, hey, I struggle with this too, so I'm just like you. But because we have to view it through that lens of her death, it changes how we view things and changes what our ultimate perception is.
The other thing I guess I'm curious to think about and curious to think through is that she had been through a number of relationships. I was surprised to learn that I knew about Dodi, I guess, as because of that's who she was dating or seeing or involved with at the time of the accident. But there had been others before that, including a Pakistani surgeon that she was linked closely with. I guess one of the questions also would be a surviving Diana. The dying Diana is single. Yes, yes, she's involved with other men, but she's not in a marriage situation.
Or even engaged.
Right. A surviving Diana probably becomes engaged and becomes married. So I guess one of the questions about a potential alternative timeline is, how is that viewed by not only the public, the world public, maybe one way, but by the British public, maybe an entirely different way.
Right. It's important to note that that surgeon that you were mentioning, he is Muslim, and so not only would have you had an ex-member of the royal family getting married again, she's getting married to someone from a different faith, from a different background, from a different country, from a different several different things. So how would that have ultimately happened and gone down with the royal family? My guess is not well. Unfortunately, the royal family has been kind of this very staunch, very Anglo-Saxon, very traditional English family. And it's only in recent years that it's kind of broadened its horizons. Would Diana have been the lead for that? We don't know. But of course, Diana at that point was not a member of the royal family. So would that have caused the royal family to come even more inward, or would they have become more accepting? We don't know.
So I think probably to a great degree her oldest son William, who is close enough in the line to the throne that it's easy to imagine a scenario where he could become king someday because of the Charles's age and the things that are there. Harry, the younger son, had a little bit of a wild phase. This was after his mother's death, during his, I guess, late teens and early 20s. I guess you could even argue up to today. He married someone who is
biracial.
Yeah.
And an actress, former actress.
Yeah, so that's a departure.
Definitely.
So under an alternative timeline, do you think that, now specifically speaking of William and Harry, with the influence of their mother, we talked a little bit about philanthropic things earlier. I'm not just talking about personal social things. Are they likely to have turned out differently, the same, maybe mostly the same, but slightly colored or shaded differently? What are the thoughts on that?
I definitely think they would have, I think, ultimately gotten to where they are now, but the path to get there would have been a little bit different. If you have Diana, they still have both their parents. Granted, I think as Diana tried to figure out what her life was like as an ex-member of the royal family, and then you have Charles very much still part of the establishment, I think there would have been a little bit of tension between the two parenting styles. I think we saw that even a little bit in just the year and a half before Diana died, definitely the two parenting styles. So I think you would have had that tension of Diana wanting to raise her sons one way, Charles being in some senses forced to raising his sons another way, and that tension there. I definitely don't think you would have had Harry, he's famously known for wearing a Nazi uniform to a party. I don't think that would have happened. I think Diana, even though it would have been, she would have been raising her sons differently than Charles, I think she would have been more of a steadying influence in their life, so that Harry doesn't ultimately have the wild child persona that he is known for. However, and they ultimately have become, you know, they both served in the military. They both have very strong philanthropic interests, and have stabled out to an extent. I think they would have gotten there eventually. It's just maybe you wouldn't have had the circular path it took to get there. But I also think, talking about Harry, or talking about William specifically, William, of course, goes off to St. Andrews University in Scotland, marries Catherine Middleton. They now have three children. It's possible that he might never have had that chance to go off and marry someone like Catherine. If Diana is still alive, maybe Charles is saying you don't have the freedom that I'm ultimately giving you and being able to go off to Scotland to go to college. So it's possible he would have married somebody like a duchess, a lady, a countess, very much like his mother was. His mother had come from the aristocracy. So we might not have had a commoner. Essentially, she will become Queen of England one day. She's the wife of the heir to the throne. She's the mother of three heirs to the throne. So I don't think we would have had that happen. And of course, we talked about Harry briefly. He's now married to the former Meghan Markle, now the Duchess of Sussex. It's possible that that might not have happened. He might not have gone and kind of gone on this exploration of self that it took to ultimately find his wife. And now, of course, he has a child now, too. So they've stabled out. I think they would have always stabled out and would have gotten to someplace similar to where they are now. But I think the path that it took to get there would have been much different. We wouldn't have had some of the antics that we might have had, or some of the choices that might have taken place.
So in your opinion, is there more of a difference in the alternate timeline and what happens publicly and with the monarchy and with the political situation, I guess, for lack of a better term, in the United Kingdom? Or is there more impact on the private aspects with Diana not surviving?
I think there's more of an impact on the political and the perception. Definitely. I think we talked before about, obviously, the change in what the monarchy sees is acceptable for them to be involved in. So I think that's definitely a change. I also think there's a change in how they view the public, and how they view how their perception of the public needs to be maintained. It needs to be taken care of to ultimately survive and be a viable monarchy in the future. So I definitely think it's more of a public impact on if Diana has changed, Diana had survived versus a private impact, just because they're having to kind of keep up with her, so to speak, in terms of the good work that she's doing and the good front that she's putting on, and they have to kind of maintain that instead of kind of going back into their shell and recluding.
Again, one of the interesting things that I found in terms of speculation was, at least in a number of the sort of, I don't know what you call it, historical fiction, I guess, imagined historical fiction is what that becomes with the Survived Diana, some of the novels and the other writings, there was speculation that obviously she probably would have remarried.
Probably.
Whether it would have been to Doty or not, is, I guess, is questionable. But in several instances there, they talked about the possibility that she may not have had a successful second marriage. And so one potential outcome in the future is, now imagine Diana
as a twice divorced
Princess of Wales and still a popular, you know, cause celeb, but also carrying the additional baggage of what's going on with this person because of two failed marriages. Any thoughts on that?
Definitely, definitely. I think, as we talked about before, she had flaws. And especially going forward in an age of the internet, in an age of social media, those flaws would have just been exacerbated and magnified. So I think that as much as she struggled with the pressure back in 96, 97, I think that pressure would have been even more. So yes, we probably would have been looking at a twice divorced, I hate to say, maybe even more times divorced. Does she maybe even struggle to get it right? Struggle to find the right person for her. It's possible that we might, you know, we might be dealing with someone who hadn't ever found her real footing in the world, because I think she really hadn't. She was just barely kind of finding her footing and coming into her own, and then her life is cut short. So if she's allowed to go on, did she find it, or is she still trying to find it? I think she definitely would have continued her philanthropic work. I think she obviously would have brought her sons alongside it. Obviously, their spouses, their children. But I think her personal life wouldn't have necessarily matched her public persona.
Okay. So drawing a conclusion here as we draw things to a close, a life cut short. A life cut short so early that it's possible to speculate a lot of different situations that would move forward. And when you think about the period of time she would have moved forward through as a survivor, a lot of changes in technology, media, society that would have either been influencing her, or she would have been
influencing them.
Yeah, so she's in that, in my mind, she's in that curious space of being dying young at a time when it's easy to imagine a number of different possibilities, because there was a lot more life, at least in theory, to live, and there was a lot of things that are going on during that period of time that would have been interesting things for her to interact with, given what we know about her personality and her character and her interests, to see her moving forward through. For example, one of the things that I read was, you know, imagine her in a post 9/11 world.
Right.
Imagine, you know, with some of the other crises that have gone on around the world in terms of health crises. She was, as you mentioned before, very much on the cutting edge of what was the most challenging and also social health issue of the day, which was AIDS. And there are other things now that, you know, might have equally been the type of thing that she would have been advocates for. And I think that part is interesting. So I think it is interesting to think about Diana as a life not cut short. And what that means moving forward. So good stuff. Alexis, thanks for leading out on the episode today. And we want to say, as we always do, thank you to those of you that listen and have found A Fork in Time, the Alternate History Podcast. We would encourage you to do a couple of things for us if you like what you hear here. One of those things is to leave reviews and ratings on the various places that you can obtain the podcast. I keep wanting to call it iTunes. I guess technically now that's Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, I don't keep up with that part of technology either.
Yeah, so if it's iTunes or Apple Podcasts that you use to get the show, certainly you can leave a review or ratings there. Stitcher, Google Podcasts, all of the other places that were out there on the web that you can leave ratings and reviews for us. We certainly would appreciate that. One of the things we would encourage, you'll find in the show notes, is a link to our blog. The blog is something that we're trying to get up and going because what we want is feedback. You've heard what Alexis thinks and what I think a little bit about the the untimely death of Diana, but you may have an entirely different take on that. And one of the things we hope to stimulate here at A Fork in Time is exactly that discussion. You may disagree, and we want to hear that disagreement. You may have some additional thoughts or points that we didn't even think about, but that other listeners of the podcast who would also tune into the blog there may find of interest to them. We do have a webpage now. That's A Fork in Time Podcast. Remember the A on the front of that.
And it is and podcast on the end.
That's correct. And it is .com, though, to keep it easy for you. So certainly if you go there right now, that will take you to our Patreon page. So one of the opportunities that exists is for you to participate in the podcast, not just as a listener, not just as someone who would provide comment on the blog, but you can actually participate as a participant with your support. For that support, there's some extras that we give there. One of the things that we do give to our Patreon supporters is priority access on the suggestion of topics and actually the opportunity to join us as a guest co-host. One of the things I look forward to as we move forward with the podcast is actually having those that have found the podcast that we don't even know who they are today joining us for topics that they find of interest and sort of growing the community of those that are interested in alternate history. And one of the interesting things that we've discovered so far in the podcast is one of the challenges actually is not that there's a limited amount of topics, but that there are so many topics to choose from and trying to move around among them to the things that we know will appeal to the interest of different listeners and different things that are there. We've already hit our sort of second podcast on things British, which is fine because there's an interest in that. But we look to do more things that tie back to ancient as well as modern. Some things that might not even be political in their implications, like this particular one that may be more cultural or social in their implications. So if you have some ideas about particular topics, we would welcome you to participate there on our Patreon page and give us those suggestions. You can reach us by email, again, for feedback and comment. We have received email from some listeners. We take that email seriously, some constructive criticisms that can are contained inside of that. We do appreciate those as well. That's at aforkintime@gmail.com. Again, all of these things can be found in the show notes to make it easy for you to find us. That also includes social media. Alexis in her day job, in her real job, the one that actually produces a paycheck, that's part of what she does is social media. So what are some of the places we can actually be found on social media, Lex?
You can actually find us on Facebook and as well as Pinterest. So please look for A Fork in Time on both of those social media outlets, and we would love to connect with you. We appreciate, your feedback, anything you would like to share with us on those outlets, and we look forward to growing those communities. Again, we thank you for joining us today on A Fork in Time, and we want to remind you of that wonderful adage that we adapt just a little bit from the great baseball player, Yogi Berra. If you find A Fork in Time, take it. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to A Fork in Time, the Alternate History Podcast. Join us next time.